Thanks for coming out, first of all. And again, very happy to have finally made it. This is our third try coming up here, having to reschedule. I think we started the first back in September, I think was our first try. So yeah, one of those winters. So we're here, just happy to be here. But we also have stuff to talk about and snacks, so that's bonus too. So just before we get started, I'm just going to introduce myself. So I'm Paul McDonald. I work for the Canadian Wildlife Service out of the Goose Bay office. And with me is...
Hi, I'm Mika Hastings, so I'm helping out Paul with the caribou pile this year, based in St. John's, so first time in Labrador. Fun?
Yeah. So we've been doing meetings like this throughout Labrador, again, since September, but with various success. So far we've been to Rigolet, Hostville, Nakovic, Northwest River, Goose Bay, and Labrador City. So, and then Wednesday night we're going to Hopedale. And then in April, hopefully, we're going to be meeting with Natwishish and Sheshishi. So that's going to be our Labrador tour for this consultation. So I'll get more into here and why it's important, why Mika and I work for Canadian Wildlife Service, which is under Environment and Climate Change Canada. It's a federal department. So that's part of the rationale behind these meetings, but I'll get to that. So you'll see I have a presentation set up here so we can all follow along, but the idea is really to get your feedback, to hear from you, your opinions, your ideas, concerns, and how you feel about caribou. The main question we want to ask you, we have two, I guess we call populations of caribou which have been assessed as endangered. So the question now is, should these be added under the Federal Species at Risk Act? So that's the main question that we're trying to get to today to discuss this. So in terms of just structuring this discussion today, and we can change it as we go along if you'd like, but really the way we have it laid out is, first of all, I want to explain the listing process. So what does it mean to list something under the Species at Risk Act, and how long does it take, and what are the steps? So I'll kind of guide through that part. The next part is I just want to talk about some of the biology of the caribou. I'm not going to go into too much. This is the part where I'd like to hear from you. You're the ones that know about the caribou in this area, so give your opinions. So what I'm going to do is go over some of the main highlights of what this advisory body called COSEWIC. What are some of the main reasons why they assess caribou as endangered? So I'm going to present that information. That's the information that we have so far. So again, we can discuss whether or not you agree with it, whether you have new information, or just your feelings about it. And then the last part is the part which, what does it mean if it gets added under this federal act? So kind of my job to help you understand what is the Species at Risk Act, and what does it mean if these caribou get added under the Species at Risk Act. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about legislation, so just remind yourself there's coffee back there. All right, now just make another highlight too. As Canadian Wildlife Service, we're not caribou biologists per se, so we're just presenting information to help you understand. So our role is just to make sure you have the information. We're not the ones that do the study, so we're not trying to convince you that our work is right or saying that it should be listed. Just trying to make sure that everybody understands so they can get your feedback. So just quickly, I'll go through the process. So this is called SARA, so Species at Risk Act, the listing process. So this is the act, and it's very structured, and there's a bunch of processes, and I'll show you some of the processes. But one of them is there's a very structured process for getting species on or off the act. So at the back of the act, there's a list of species. This is the list of species that are at risk. So anything's covered under here gets all the all the other bits and parts of the act in the front. So anytime we change that list at the back, we have to go through this process. And we do this process pretty much every year. And we do it for terrestrial species, and DFO usually coordinates all the marine aquatic species. But we don't always come out to communities to ask the question for all species. Like some of the other species included in this group of species are, do I have them here? Even grosbeak, and however, there's a lady beetle. Let's probably remember what it's called, transverse lady beetle. So for those kind of species, we don't often come to communities. We'll usually send out notices to the governments and get some of the people involved in lands and resources to comment on those kind of things. But for caribou, very important species, so that's why we're coming out to hear directly from people. So the first thing that kicks off the whole thing is this COSEWIC assessment, and I'll talk about COSEWIC after. And COSEWIC assessment gets sent to the minister, and the minister then gives her recommendation to the governor and council. I say her because, in this case, because it's terrestrial, the minister is the Minister of Environment and Climate Change. It's Catherine McKenna. And then there's three possible outcomes of this decision done by the governor and council. They can list the species as it's been assessed, not list it under the Act, or they send it back to this advisory group so that they, you know, do more studies, get more information, and reassess it. And the part of the process we're in right now is this part here. So we're going out to communities to hear feedback and get people's comments, which is going to inform the minister's recommendation. So that's where we fit into this process. So right now, Mika and I have been traveling around, hearing from people, getting more information. So the minister already has the COSEWIC assessment, which actually looks like this if anyone's interested in seeing it. But we also want to hear not just the COSEWIC side or their assessment. We want to go to the communities and hear from people that are going to be most impacted. So all that's going to be collected and provided to the minister to inform her recommendation. And we'll break it up in kind of like two different parts that we're really looking for. So first, the first part of the process, it doesn't show up very well. I'll walk over. So the validate that COSEWIC assessment. Do you agree with the assessment? Is there something missing? Is there more things that need to be considered? That's the biological aspect, so that's what we want to hear from you. But the really important part of us going out to communities is this, what we call the social and economic impacts. What are the consequences, your personal, like, what are the effects on you personally if this were listed under the Act? And that's the part where I have to do a little bit of explaining to help you understand what it means when something is added under the Act. So just in terms of how we're providing this information, so Mika will be taking notes, and these get shared back to the Inuit community government to validate the results, make sure that we heard your comments correctly. And then we're going to send all the community, all the Nunatsiavut community comments that we hear, we're going to send those to the Nunatsiavut government, so the Lands and Resources Department. And I do suspect that Nunatsiavut will make a formal comment. If you personally wanted to submit a comment, you can do it online through email. You can mail it to me if anyone still sends letters. However you want to provide comments. But I think the easiest way is if you just want to provide your comments here, Mika will write them down. We'll make sure we provide it forward. I'll stop there. So that's kind of the process. So you don't want me to go over any of that again? Or are we good? That's
how do do we have one question?
Yeah.
How do the Toriyama Lands interact with the previous slide?
Yeah.
And cooperative management of the park.
Good question. So we did do another, we had a meeting with the park co-management board in August. So they decided, actually we've already done a similar presentation, right? That was back in August. And the co-management board for the park has already submitted their formal response to the minister. Did you want to elaborate on what that response was?
No, you can, but there's also the Wildlife Lands Board.
Yes. So that's the other part. So for Nunatsiavut government, the Park Co-Management Board, especially important for the Tongat Mountains Caribou. And we also do have the Co-Management Board, the Tongat Wildlife Plants Co-Management Board. So they will also be provided with information. I do suspect we'll approach the board to present them with what we've heard from the communities. We do have some of the board members have been attending some of the community sessions, so they've been hearing some of the comments firsthand as well. And then at that point, I think we'll work with the secretariat and co-management board to see how they want to provide their comments. But it'll probably be a formal response as well. All right, so just a little bit of background. I won't go into it entirely, but just kind of remind ourselves some of the main parts. Why is there an act to begin with? So the first and main purpose of the act is to prevent Canadian species from disappearing. We don't want anything to go to extinct or become extirpated. And what extirpated means is that it disappears from an area. So for example, if you know, we lost something in Labrador, but they still had a small population in Manitoba, it's not extinct because there's still animals somewhere else, but we'd say they're extirpated from Labrador. So we don't want that. So we don't want them extinct. And we want to make sure they stay where they're supposed to be. And the third part is it's easiest to prevent species from becoming at risk at all. So take early action to make sure that they don't become at risk. So those are just general points on the Act itself. The way the Act is structured, it doesn't replace any Act, like the Provincial Wildlife Acts, everything that Nunatsiavut government, the co-management boards, all their powers, they still remain as the Management Acts. The Federal Act doesn't replace anything they do. It's supposed to complement those acts. So the Federal Act just provides what they call the essential foundation. So just provides the basic, brings everything together. So protection of individuals and habitat necessary for recovery. It also provides the information required for recovery and action. So quite often species at risk, sometimes there's not enough information available. So once they're listed under the Act, it enables us to do more studies, so we can provide resources to communities, so we can get community-level information. We can do more scientific studies and support those kind of things. And public reporting and transparency. So there's a lot of reporting in here, so it holds our minister accountable to make sure that we're always engaging the people, so that people like us will keep coming out to communities and reporting back on what's being done and how we can improve what we're doing. So again, it's very process, detail, and obligation for the ministers. With strict timelines, because species at risk usually are very urgent situation, so we need to take immediate action. Another interesting part about the Species at Risk Act, it's fairly new legislation, dating back about 2003, coming into full force around 2004, so in terms of a law, it's a relatively new law. And at that point, the Canadian government was starting to learn a lot and get a better understanding about its you know, responsibilities to Indigenous people. So those things are built right into the Act. They're very clear. And this one up front, it's called Section 3. It's in respect to Aboriginal and treaty rights. So it just states at the very beginning, says, "For greater certainty, nothing in this Act shall be construed as to abrogate or derogate from the protection provided for existing Aboriginal treaty rights of the Aboriginal people of Canada by the recognition and affirmation of those rights in Section 35 of the Constitution Act." That's just a very wordy way of saying that this Act is not going to, you know, replace any of the acts that the Aboriginal treaty rights that are protected by the Constitution. Those are going to be more important than the Act if it comes to a challenge.
But doesn't conservation, or I suppose it's the right word, override that?
No, you're right. So it gets into, it can get, well, this is where it comes a really legal trickiness, right? Because then becomes a challenge on the Aboriginal right itself. An Aboriginal right can be infringed with adequate justification. And the adequate justification that we usually deal with is conservation. But there's a specific set of steps and tests that the government or the managing bodies have to prove that it's justified.
What you just said there now is that governance out of Ottawa that dictates that happening, or if somebody like myself said there's all kinds of caribou now, take it off the Act. Which one would work?
It would be a very long legal process to make that decision, usually. Like, part of that test is that, you know, first of all, you have to demonstrate that there is a conservation concern. You have to consult with people who are affected, the ones who have the right that are being infringed. And if required, you'd even have to accommodate that right. So there's all those steps that the managing body, which is usually either, in this case, would probably be the provincial government, because they're the ones who manage caribou directly. So they probably have primary responsibility for taking those steps to show that they could infringe that right. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a biologist. I'm always having to talk about this legal stuff over the years. This is kind of what I have to talk about now. But interesting parts in the Act in terms of the Indigenous aspect. There is a national level organization called NACOSAR, which is the National Aboriginal Council on Species at Risk. So these are the ones who advise on how the government of Canada implements the Act. So that has all the national level Indigenous organization representation on that. Also throughout the Act, Indigenous traditional knowledge in the Act is still refers to it as Aboriginal traditional knowledge. Make sure it's incorporated in all aspects of SARA, so all the recovery, all the species assessments, those kind of things, based on the best available information, which includes Indigenous traditional knowledge. And again, SARA requires consultation and cooperation in recovery planning. And in terms of the legal side of things, those two terms are very specific meanings. So it means what you see tonight, before we make a decision on whether or not to add, people like us come out and talk to people so that you're part of the decision-making process. So that's the consultation. So that's written in the Act that we have to come out and do this. It's not just somebody making the decision without talking. And there are specific provisions in there for Wildlife Management Board. Was here, our co-management board, Forget Wildlife Plants Co-Management Board, would be considered a Wildlife Management Board under the Act. There's specific sections in there that would say when and how we engage the Wildlife Management Boards. Now, I'm not going to read all this to you, but I do put it here because it just kind of guides the conversation of how I'm going to lay this discussion out. So these are the processes I was talking about in the Act. And there's a couple of different sections here. So assessment is one, listing, and then recovery planning and protection. I'll go through these. So I'm just going to talk about those in kind of headings. But just so you can see how the process fits together, it starts with the assessment. So the assessment is the part that's been done. That's what started off this whole process. So this group, which I'll be calling COSIWIC, Committee on the Status of Endangered Wildlife Canada, they take the available biological information and they do one of these assessments. So they do a report with the available knowledge on caribou, in this case. So important things to know about this advisor group is that they're independent. It's not a government group, so they could be academia. It could contain government scientists. It might contain provincial biologists or federal biologists or species experts. But they're independent. They're doing it just based on the available information on the caribou. They have an Aboriginal traditional knowledge subcommittee. So So it's not just the science. They make sure that they do include the Aboriginal traditional knowledge. So there's an advisor group in there that makes sure that information is as well. And they're responsible, so the act itself says that this is the group that's going to be responsible for doing these designations. So when they do their assessments, they're quantitative-based. So they basically have a checklist of things, a series of scores that they do. So it's very numbers-based. They have a scoring scheme that they use. It's quantitative. And they're adapted based on these international standards. So these are the same standards, criteria that might be used for if you're assessing a gorilla or a giraffe, whatever the species are, they're using kind of the same structure for those criteria. And again, it's best available information. So it's, you know, available scientific knowledge, indigenous traditional knowledge, or community knowledge, people that know the animal. So whatever information they can find. And in their assessment, they're trying to determine if a species is at risk. And there's four categories of at risk. One of them is endangered. So a lot of people talk about endangered species, but that's only one category of at risk. So it's important to know that there's four categories. So I'll do this. So this is increasing level of concern. So less concern to the most concern. So the one on the bottom, that category is called special concern. That's when the species is still doing pretty good, but there's some things that, you know, have been indicated that there might be some problems in the future. This is where we want to take action before the species becomes, you know, before it starts having trouble, because it's easier to prevent things from being in trouble than it is to try to fix it after. So an example of a species of special concern is a polar bear. So in this case, they're listed as special concern under the Act. We can still harvest them. There's lots of bears around. People are seeing them more and more. But they're listed as special concern because there's, you know, uncertainty about what's going to happen with climate change. So we want to make sure that we keep healthy populations. So we can do take management actions to make sure the population stays healthy. The next level up, next level of concern, that yellow one, that one's called threatened. So this is where the population needs a little bit of help. There's usually man-caused activities which are causing the population to go lower than it would in its natural cycle. So it needs a bit of assistance, usually fixing habitat or there's some main threat identified. An example of a threatened species is boreal caribou. So that's your Black Joseph, Red Wine, Mealy Mountain. Those are boreal caribou. They are all listed as threatened. The next level is endangered. That means these animals have been assessed in a category where they're, you know, they're about to be, or they're facing imminent threat of disappearing from the wild. So this is a high, high level of concern. And the two caribou groups that we're talking about today, that's what they've been assessed at, that very high level of concern. The one at top, that's the one I mentioned earlier, that's extirpated. That means they're lost from the area. They're not extinct, but they're no longer in the current area. So those are the four categories that a COSIWIC will assess something at risk. If it's not at risk, they can assess it at not at risk. Or if they don't have enough information, they can say data deficient. But if it's at risk, it's one of those four categories. And again, the caribou we're talking about today are in that very high level of concern. Another important thing to know when we're talking about this, how COSIWIC has assessed these caribou, is which caribou are they talking about? Because there's all kinds of different ways to divide caribou. We talked about herds, local populations, populations, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, everybody has a different way of grouping caribou. So the way they've done their assessment is what they call designatable units. And these are all the caribou across Canada. So they have grouped all the caribou in Canada into 12 different groupings. But the ones we're going to talk about today are this eastern migratory one, which includes our George River, and then the Torngat Mountains, and everyone knows where that one is. And I'll talk more about that. One other thing to point out on this map is a dotted line at the bottom, and that's what's known as the historical extent. Caribou used to be found as far south as down in the U.S. and through the Atlantic provinces, the Maritimes down here. They're not down there anymore, so we've already lost caribou here.
Well, you missed that one down there, extirpated or?
Yep, so we would say they're extirpated from that area. Right? They no longer exist down there. So, and of course, what do we know about this area? There's high level of people, high activity, high development in those areas. And caribou do not do well in those areas.
Well, is it a possibility, too, of introducing different species down in those areas, too?
Yep, so that's another thing, too, right? So we're having climate change and different other species of both their, you know, like other deer, moose, those kind of things, but also predators. So there's that change there in the south. So and part of that is because of development from people, like creating roads and those kind of things, right? And farms and all kinds of things. So it's all coming part of the effect.
party separating now? Because you had all those caribou, all the green, and the George River color, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Are they separating now, or are they all lumped in as one assessment?
They're still all lumped as one. Here, I'll show you the next slide. We'll show that a little better. So here's what Ron was talking about here. So we have two, there's two designatable units that COSIWC assessed. One is just the Torngat Mount. The other group, which they grouped all as one, so one assessment for all of these, right? So all four of these are included in what they're calling the Eastern Migratory. And they're grouped like that because they say that they have similar genetics and similar behavior. Whereas the Torngats are kind of off by themselves in those mountains, and they have a different behavior, right? So they have migration altitudinally, where these ones are more similar. So with these four, it includes the two main ones. So we have one here, George River, which we're most familiar with here, Leaf River, which we always know quite well also in Quebec, but they also have two smaller herds. This one's called the Southern Hudson Bay, and this little one over here, Manitoba's Cape Churchill. So their assessment groups all of these caribou into one unit, one designatable unit.
That land that showed as extirpated?
Yeah.
Is it from all the different regions of the caribou herd, or just one herd?
It was from all of them.
So when you say genetic, similar genetics, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, it gets a little bit tricky because, there are ways to tell genetics. So caribou will have an affinity to a certain group, so they'll have a certain set of genetics in common. But of course, as we know, these groups will also overlap. So you get some genetics from this group and this group. So it does mix a little bit, but mostly, you know, morphological, how they grow, they look very similar sometimes. But there are other groups of caribou which look very different, right? Some are, you can tell the group because it's a lot smaller, or it's a lot bigger, or it's wider, or, you know, more robust. So sometimes they come out different like that, but I think that's about as much as I want to get into the genetics of it. It's one of the tools that people try to use to differentiate the groups. These groupings, I will say, are under a lot of debate all the time, because, you know, even looking at these, if you look at that George River group, people say, it's not one big group. There's a group here, and there's a group here, and there's a group here. Right? So this is one part where people always debate about this. But this is how COSIWC does it.
If you done that and group all these together, the caribou would not be in danger.
Possibly.
Because there would be a lot of caribou in that massive area.
Mm-hmm. It could be, yeah.
But
it does change how the criteria would work.
That would confuse a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because they would think that the population all over is healthy because there's caribou in all that area.
Yeah. No, that's a very true statement. That happens sometimes. An example of that is the wolverine. So we have a wolverine in Labrador. People say we haven't really confirmed the presence of it in a couple of decades, but it used to be called the Eastern Wolverine population, and it was endangered. COSIWC did an assessment. They reassessed wolverine, but they grouped it in with all the wolverine together, and now they say it's a lower level of concern. So the wolverine in Labrador didn't go up, but the way they assessed it made it look different. So that does happen.
So are you saying that at the end of the day, it makes sense to combine everything together to make it look not as glib, as bad?
No, it wouldn't make sense. I think the debate is the way that COSIWC tries to group it is something that makes sense in a management and recovery. So if they're looking at common threats, like if they're going to do and what the species have in common. So if you do one action, is it going to help all of these? So they try to group it based on the behavior and how much they have similar threats and features in common.
Or are they just trying to make it easier on themselves?
I don't think it's any easier.
Do you know the numbers of Leaf River? I thought they were doing quite well.
I can't remember them exactly. They're in this report. So maybe I'll go through the next couple slides first. It kind of goes through some of those percentages, but I can give you the details on that. I'll come back to that one, okay?
Would you know the Alaskan part too?
I don't know the numbers over there.
I
could find out, but I don't know offhand the Alaskan.
Because I heard they get like 5 per person every so
you say they're
like every couple weeks or something? It was like on the show, like below zero.
Oh, they're coming back. The population's healthier.
No, I mean, do you got their information from them, the Alaskan?
I don't.
Because I heard they get like way over there.
They're governed by the USA, so they have no information on that side, I would say.
We could get that information. I just don't have it here. I'm just going to go through a couple of points. I won't go through. There's a full report here with lots of information, but I'm not going to read that, obviously. So I'm just going through a few points of why Kosiwik assessed them as endangered. Okay, so this, well, we know where Torngat Mountains are. That's roughly the range that they have for Torngat Mountains. So, they're assessed as endangered, so that high level of concern, which is facing imminent extirpation or extinction. So that means it's a very serious concern. They have a serious concern based on the information that they have that these caribou may disappear.
I think the Torngat Mountain has only recently been started at, how do you sense it?
Yeah, that's correct.
It only recently started on that.
Yeah.
So we don't know the past populations of that herd because it hasn't been encountered in the past.
Yeah, no, that's a very good comment because this information that they have in their assessment does have limitations. I'll go through some of those, but that's one of them.